Kia ora and welcome to Goodfellow Podcasts. This episode is kindly supported by the Royal New Zealand College of General Practitioners, the Auckland faculty. I'm Dr. Louise Kugler, a specialist GP, and I'm delighted to welcome back to the podcast Nikki Kaye to discuss secondary amenorrhea. Nikki is an honorary clinical lecturer in the Division of Medicine at the University College London, where she lectures and researches in the area of exercise endocrinology with publications in this field. Nikki's clinical endocrine work is mainly with active women, exercisers, dancers, and athletes, with a focus on relative energy deficiency in sport, or RED-S, and those navigating perimenopause and menopause. Nikki is the author of Health, Hormones, and Human Potential, a guide to understanding your hormones to optimize your health and performance. Nikki authored the British Association of Sports and Exercise Medicine online resource and is the medical advisor to the Scottish Ballet. Hi, Nikki, and welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks very much, Louise. Glad to be here.
So today we are providing an overview on secondary amenorrhea and aim to address the concern, why have my patient's periods stopped? Then ask, do I need to worry? And when is the absence of menstruation considered abnormal? And what shall I do about it? So Nikki, can we start with a definition, please, of secondary amenorrhea?
Yeah, so secondary amenorrhea is lack of menstruation of periods for 3 months or more in a woman who was previously menstruating. By the way, Louise, this has slightly changed from when I was training, which I admit is a long time ago now, doing my medical training. We used to say 6 months, but now we've swung more over to the American way and it's 3 months. There are lots of little ifs and buts, 3 months in a woman who has gone through secondary sexual changes physically. But I think actually, if we say 3 months, that's a really good thing to say, because sometimes women leave it longer, or the doctor might leave it longer and think, oh, well, maybe we'll just leave it a bit longer. But actually, as we know, it takes time to get these things looked into and sorted out. So I'm going to stick with 3 months. So in a woman presenting to you who has previously been menstruating and says, look, I haven't had any periods for 3 months, then I would say that is secondary amenorrhea and definitely warrants investigation to see what's going on.
So obviously we need to exclude pregnancy and we would do a definitive test. But what are the other differential diagnoses we should consider and how do you think about these?
Well, I suppose we should mention that there could be mechanical reasons, if you will, some issues with the endometrium itself, outflow obstruction, although that's kind of unlikely if it's secondary amenorrhea. So the main category in my mind, and not that I'm biased at all about hormones, is there is some hormonal reason behind this, what's going on. And the way I think about it, there could be a problem at the control center, the hypothalamus pituitary, or there could be something with the ovaries themselves, not responding to these messages or not working as they should. And there could be some other medical issues, for example, autoimmune conditions like hypothyroidism or Addison's. I know that's rare. Those could be other reasons more likely to be affecting the ovaries, it's true. But that's how I think about it generally. I sort of tick off, absolutely, you make a very important point. A beta HCG test is really easy peasy just to check, exclude pregnancy. That's the really super important thing. Mechanical reasons, if I can put it like that, sort of a lower priority. But then it's really you want to find out what's happening to the reproductive axis. Where is the issue? Is it lying at the control center or is it something to do with the ovaries themselves?
So how do women typically present and is there a typical clinical picture?
Well, it will really very much depend on, you know, the origin of where the issue might be. But I think as with anything in medicine, the first thing, of course, is the history, the clinical history. There will be important clues there. If the woman, for example, is reporting weight loss and doing a lot of exercise, this is what I'm seeing a lot, not just in elite athletes, but in, you know, keen exercising women, which is great to see women exercising, but sometimes if, frankly, they're overdoing it, not fueling sufficiently. So there will be definitely a clue there if there's something a function or going on. There's an imbalance in lifestyle behaviors for sure. Other things you might be, you know, trying to tease out in that clinical picture are consequences of the amenorrhea. So all causes of amenorrhea, apart from PCOS, polycystic ovary syndrome, will have low estradiol levels. So therefore, the woman might be more likely to be having problems with bone health or injury, you know, stress fractures if they're running a lot, or just sort of niggly soft tissue injuries. So as always, I think, Louise, the most important thing is that you have to ask, you know, listen carefully to what the woman's telling you about her clinical history, because usually by the time you've taken a clinical history and discussed, often you're pretty sure or certain towards where you think the problem might be. You're going to do the investigations, of course, but you've got a good inkling of what might be going on here.
As you say, the history is crucial, but I'm wondering how we can differentiate secondary amenorrhea with normal variations in menstruation, I suppose, particularly in those younger women who tend to have irregular cycles.
Well, it's true. Some women have an absolutely spot on, very, very regular menstrual cycle. Mine always used to be 26 days on the dot, you know, like this. So some women can have very, very regular cycles, but there is a variation, not only for the woman herself, but, you know, between women. So cycle lengths are anything from 22 to 35 days. So if the cycle length is falling within those parameters of 22 to 35, that's fine. Because sometimes women get really, you know, concerned. I find them saying, oh, but I've read it, the average is 28 days. Well, it's not 28, it's 29 is the average as it happens. But anyway, you know, it doesn't matter. So long as it's in within that range, that's okay. And that you're having at least 9 periods per calendar year. If you have fewer than 9 periods per calendar year, as you know, we call that oligomenorrhea. And that although it's not amenorrhea, it's oligomenorrhea. So again, that's a warning sign. So talking through the nitty gritty, the details of the cycle lengths, how many periods roughly per year are we getting? And then if those are sort of ticked off, then you know that, okay, that's okay. You still need to obviously support and work with the woman and keep an eye on things, but it's quite reassuring if at least you know that fundamentally the cycles are falling within those ranges.
I wonder if I can ask you about women who have been taking contraception. So obviously we know with Depo-Provera, there's a delay in return to fertility and cycles. But is there a rough guide that we should have in our minds when somebody comes off, say, the combined pill before we do testing and before we worry?
Well, yes, you're right. There's this sort of thing floating around, oh, post-pill amenorrhea. Well, I'm not really sure. I mean, amenorrhea, secondary amenorrhea, there's no cycles for 3 months. So I think that's what we use. If nothing is happening after 3 months, then, you know, again, going through all the procedures that we're going to talk about, you know, pregnancy, by the way, is number one, always tick that off. And just some basic bloods, just to get an idea, see what's going on. Because otherwise, what happens, I've seen a lot of women who have been, you know, told, oh, it's post-pill amenorrhea. And then they're coming to me like a year or 2 years and saying, well, what's happened? And then it's like, oh, my goodness. And then we do the blood test and we find that they, you know, have got whatever it might be, FHA, functional hypothalamic amenorrhea or whatever. So I think having a low threshold for investigating and looking into it, at least a first look, you know, nothing super extensive or expensive indeed in terms of blood tests, just to reassure and see what's going on is a good idea.
Right. So I wonder if I can pick up on history taking. So are there particular key questions that you ask?
Well, I always ask about lifestyle factors. So I always ask, of course, let's assume we've asked the nitty gritty about the menstrual history. You know, when did your age of menarche? What's your cycle normally like? Have you taken any contraception in the past, etc.? So we've done all of that, and have they been pregnant before? But then asking them about their lifestyle, about how much exercise are you doing, how many times a week, what sort of intensity, get an idea, nutrition, are you eating in a regular fashion? There seems to be very much the trend of, you know, skipping meals and things like this, which obviously hormones definitely don't like, by the way. So asking the questions about the exercise, the nutrition, And general, you know, sleep patterns. Are they going to bed? Is the woman going to bed at a reasonable hour? Has she got very disturbed sleep? Is she doing shift work, i.e. is she a junior doctor? That's not a good one for your hormone health, by the way. Anyway, as we know, and general stress levels, you know, what's going on in her life. We know that even women who have got a very good balance of their lifestyle behaviors, they, if they're under a lot of stress, this can interfere with the regularity of menstruation. So just getting a feel for what's going on in the woman's life, I think, is really the key thing here.
So moving on to physical examination, what are we looking for?
Well, probably there might not be a lot, frankly, but certainly if we are thinking about PCOS, polycystic ovary syndrome, then you might observe hirsutes, so unwanted hair growth on the face, the arms. You might notice in these women, they find it very difficult for weight control. So what's their, you know, have they got a lot of visceral adiposity? Although having said all of that, there's a range of phenotypes for PCOS. So sometimes you can have the slimmer looking PCOS, but just generally having a look at the woman for signs of PCOS. Maybe if you suspect any thyroid issue going on there, you might want to do some, you know, basic thyroid, you know, just palpation of the thyroid gland, et cetera, et cetera. So sometimes there aren't loads of things to look for physically, but already from the history, you will be thinking already, is this PCOS? Is this FHA? Is this an autoimmune thing? So your examination will be sort of focused on maybe those particular areas, not ignoring the usual things of, you know, blood pressure, pulse rate, et cetera, you know?
Wonderful. So thinking about investigation and labs, what do we request and why do we request them?
Well, I hope you don't mind if I mention that in my book, I have a flow diagram to sort of how I approach this. So the flow diagram is, first of all, like we've already said, make sure you've excluded pregnancy. So doing the beta HCG test, obviously, that's the first thing you do. The next thing is measuring FSH and LH. And this is from WHO criteria, because measuring FSH and LH will distinguish immediately between a hypothalamic or an ovarian cause. So if the FSH and LH are very low, this shows that the hypothalamus is downregulated. There's something going on there. If, on the other hand, the FSH and LH are high, then this is suggesting there's an ovarian issue, maybe primary ovarian insufficiency, for example. Or if the FSH and LH are sort of in the normalish range, maybe LH a touch high, then you might be thinking about PCOS. So then it will branch out from the FSH and LH. So let's take the case of the FSH and LH being low. When I say low, I mean low range. I don't mean necessarily out of the range, just to highlight that point, because, you know, officially having an LH of about 1.5 could be said, oh, that's in the normal range. But if that's in the context of the woman having secondary amenorrhea, that is not normal, if you know what I mean, physiologically not correct. So that is what I'm meaning by low range. So if FSH and LH are low range, then the next thing you need to look at is prolactin, because that is, if we have a prolactinoma, excess production of prolactin, that will suppress FSH and LH. So right there, you've got your diagnosis, prolactinoma. If the prolactin is truly in the normal range, or maybe a little bit raised if the woman's doing a lot of exercise because it's a stress response hormone, but definitely below the level you would consider high for indicating a prolactinoma, then the next thing you need to look at is to check that the thyroid function is okay. And now we're moving down that pathway and saying, okay, this is probably FHA, functional hypothalamic amenorrhea, because that is a diagnosis of exclusion. You've got to have gone down the pathway there. What happens if the FSH and LH are raised? Then you are thinking there is maybe an ovarian cause, primary ovarian insufficiency even. So you want to look in detail at the, again, the thyroid function also will be helpful here, and thyroid autoantibodies, also estradiol levels, and maybe imaging there, see what's going on. If the FSH and LH are kind of okay, and the LH may be a little bit high, not necessarily, it's not diagnostic criteria, and the testosterone is high, then you've got your diagnosis there of PCOS. So you see what I mean? It's really the flow diagram, in my mind, goes exclude pregnancy, and then the next key one is FSH and LH, and then you'll be directed on whichever pathway according to where that falls in the range.
Nikki, you've mentioned red flags. Can you talk us through the red flags in secondary amenorrhea?
Definitely the POI, primary ovarian insufficiency, is an important one. If you've got a raised FSH, then you will be wanting to repeat that again, as we discussed in another podcast, within 4 weeks to see if that's remained raised. So that's definitely a red flag in that sense. If the prolactin is high, I think over 1,000 milliunits per litre, that is very suggestive of prolactinoma, overproduction of prolactin, and that would warrant an MRI of the pituitary fossa for sure to confirm that and see what's going on there. But also, if a woman, the blood tests and your clinical history and examination are suggestive of PCOS, i.e. meets the Rotterdam criteria of irregular periods or amenorrhea, elevated or clinical evidence of elevated androgens, and on ultrasound, that's the third potential criteria of multiple follicles in the ovaries. And if this woman is presenting with amenorrhea, and on the ultrasound, she's got a thickened endometrium, this is definitely a red flag and concern, because there is an increased risk of malignancy in that situation of amenorrhea with a thickened endometrium and PCOS. So that would be a red flag if amenorrhea has been reported in a woman that you suspect of PCOS based on clinical and testosterone, then definitely that would be a situation where you should do a pelvic ultrasound, because you want to see what the thickness of the endometrium is, and you definitely want to induce a withdrawal bleed in that situation.
So, Nikki, the treatment plan will obviously depend on the underlying cause of the secondary amenorrhea, but are there any general management approaches that you take with these women?
Well, always, for me, it's discussing lifestyle, discussing exercise, nutrition, and sleep patterns, and stress management. This is key, because your hormones are influenced by what you do. And so this is, number one, not only important, but also empowering for the woman. She feels, okay, fine, this is something I can do, I can take control over. And by the way, it's like chalk and cheese, as we say in the UK, at least. If it's a woman with FHA due to underfueling and overexercise, then of course you'll be encouraging her to eat carbohydrates on a more regular basis. But on the other hand, if it's a woman with PCOS who's got slightly increased insulin resistance, then you'll be giving slightly the opposite. You're saying, please exercise more and just, you know, watch your portion size of carbohydrates. So lifestyle, tailored for the individual, that's the key thing. The next thing, of course, are, you know, medical interventions and pharmacological options. So I mentioned already PCOS, amenorrhea, thickened endometrium, definitely you want to be having a withdrawal bleed. If the woman with PCOS also wants contraception, then this is an appropriate situation to use the combined oral contraceptive pill, because, of course, it's contraception. And also it will cause a withdrawal, false or withdrawal bleed on a regular basis, and lower the testosterone as well, by the way, because it's the pill is processed by the liver. So it'll induce enzymes, sex hormone binding globulin, grab the testosterone. So for a woman with PCOS wanting contraception, this the combined oral contraceptives is a good call. In the case of a woman with FHA due to low energy availabilities, i.e. we're talking about REDS, relative energy deficiency in sport, then lifestyle will be key. But if you're concerned about bone health, either the woman's experienced two or more stress fractures, or on DEXA, the Z-score of the lumbar spine is less than -1, then you actually might be considering short-term HRT for bone protection, because this is much better than the contraceptive pill for bone protection. In fact, giving the contraceptive pill in this case would not be helpful. And recently I got the NICE, National Institute of Clinical Excellence in the UK, to change their guidelines on this. So it really depends on the cause of the secondary amenorrhea of the woman, what you're going to advise in terms of medical medication, etc. And really, it's so important for addressing whatever the underlying issue is for the amenorrhea and giving the woman reassurance that, yes, we can sort this out, whatever it is. And I enjoy this. I enjoy guiding the woman through this process, whichever woman we're talking about, whatever the cause of her secondary amenorrhea, so that she can deal with this, overcome it.
Thank you, Nikki. We're coming to the end of our podcast today. Were there any final thoughts?
The main thing I wanted to say is that I have so many women come to me and say they've been or frankly fobbed off and told, well, you don't have periods, but it doesn't matter because periods are only about reproduction. If you don't want to get pregnant, it doesn't matter. I think we want to make very clear that having a menstrual cycle is a sign of good health, internal hormone health. It's a barometer of healthy hormones and it's a free monthly medical check. So regardless of how much exercise the woman is doing, again, I have a lot of athletes and dancers who come and say, well, I've been told because I'm exercising, it doesn't matter, not having periods, but that's not true. every woman needs to have a menstrual cycle because these hormones, ovarian hormones, are not just about reproduction. They're vital to so many aspects of health, musculoskeletal, cardiovascular, neurological system. So my advice to, you know, fellow doctors and women themselves is if your periods have stopped for more than 3 months, please look into it, treat it seriously, try and figure out what's going on and what you need to do to restore your own menstrual cycle or whatever that would be. So that's my main message. And so in terms of practical points, always exclude pregnancy, always listen to what the woman's telling you in her clinical history, her menstrual history, what's going on and her lifestyle. That will give you big, big clues. Always do the blood tests. Don't accept that FSH and LH are, quote, in the normal range. If she's amenorrheic, there is something going on. So you need to push and find out, is it hypothalamic? Is it ovarian? And then, yeah, the only other thing that I've noticed a lot is if you're dealing with a woman with FHA, functional hypothalamic amenorrhea, when you're trying to help her restore her cycles through eating more regular carbohydrate, for example, and tempering her training, then for a moment, as the cycles try and resume, the picture might look a little bit like PCO, polycystic ovaries. The testosterone might temporarily be raised, and you might even, if you were to do an ultrasound, see some follicles because things are trying to settle down again. So just be aware that things shift, things change, and you know, monitoring and supporting the woman is really the way to resume regular menstrual function.
Fantastic. Thank you for your time again today, Nikki. If you're a New Zealand GP and would like to claim CPD points for listening to this podcast, our podcasts are eligible, so please log them. You'll find a list of resources used in this podcast, including Nikki's books, on goodfellowunit.org. Thanks for joining us today.